Oh, hello. Welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, who really want to, but often it's really hard. It feels like the news outlets require you to have a degree, nay, a master's in finance and economics, just to keep up with what they're talking about, just to loosely follow it. Not here, though, not on this podcast. Here, I'll strip it all back, make it make sense, and hopefully you'll walk away from this feeling a bit more comfortable with what's going on, despite it being actually quite terrifying, frankly. I'm Julia Bell, and please forgive my upload schedule at the minute. I have the absolute intent to do this at least once every 2 weeks, but my day job has been insane. Hoping it'll even out and then I can get back onto a regular schedule. Please be patient with me. I'm so sorry about that. But that means last time I spoke to you, we were in a slightly different situation. Liz Truss had just become Prime Minister of the UK. And since then, oh, has it been a roller coaster? The economy particularly has been on the scariest ride of all, like the, you know, the death drop, the oblivion at Alton Towers. And Truss herself has had a hell of a first month just 2 days after she became PM. Queen Elizabeth II passed away. And what followed was, of course, this almost two-week period of national mourning. It's quite a strange time in politics. It kind of put things on pause. The normal rules of Parliament were suspended. So rather than seeing MPs debating policies and laws, we saw them turning their attention and paying tributes to the Queen and, of course, swearing allegiance to the new king. King Charles III will be his official name, who incidentally, by the way, will be coronated on the 3rd of June 2023. That will be a huge week in British news and British history. But it was quite odd, the timing, because Liz Truss had just walked into number 10 and suddenly the whole focus was away from Parliament and on the royal family. But that royal focus was, I mean, I guess overshadowed, dramatically overshadowed on the 23rd of September when Liz Truss and, most importantly, her new Chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng, get used to that name. I feel like it'll be cropping up quite a lot just based on how he has taken his role. They unveiled their so-called mini budget and there has certainly been some reaction. In today's episode, I'm going to be running through what happened, what's actually involved in that quote-unquote mini-budget, what the response was, or should I say utter uproar, and how the government and the kind of bodies that have to deal with our economy, like the Office for Budget Responsibility and the Bank of England, have had to do to respond. Let's just keep using that word for now. So I'll kind of give you a run through of what's happened and where we are now. I need help with this. So I spoke to the excellent financial journalist, editor and author, John Hatfield. He did a great job of answering my many questions. This can be quite depressing and it can also be super dry and hard to attain. He has a great way of speaking, a great way of making it understandable and actually quite enjoyable to think about. So I'm really excited to get to that bit of the episode. I'll need to give you a bit of context first so you can follow the conversation. So we've got a lot to get into. Make sure you're subscribed if you don't want to miss future episodes. I'm aware the upload schedule is erratic. You don't need to tell me, but it makes it more important for you to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes because you'll get notified. If you're listening on Spotify, just click follow and then you'll get a little blue dot by the bell on the top right-hand corner of your app. And with all that nagging, thanks so much in advance for doing that. Let's get you squared away. Okay, we'll start by looking at what specifically was announced on the 23rd of September. What is Liz Truss's new government, or what did Liz Truss's new government want to do with our economy? To call it a shake-up would be an understatement. They were basically grabbing it and rattling it around. it won't surprise you to hear that the majority of the announcements, the big focus, was on cutting taxes. Cutting taxes, heavily doing so. That was a big pillar of what Liz Truss was campaigning on when she was running to be leader of the party. So in terms of keeping her promises, I guess you can't, you know, you can't criticise her for that. She stuck to what she said in that sense. So there's two big changes to income tax. Bear with me for this, by the way. When I'm running through this budget, is it going to be a bit dry? Sure. But it really affects you. So please try to bear with me. Two key changes to income tax. As it stands, right, before these new changes come in, anyone who earns between about 12 and a half grand and 50 grand a year, or 50,270, they get taxed at 20%. So 20% of their income tax, 20% of their income goes into the government pot. It's known as the basic rate. From there, if you get anything from 50 grand to 150 grand, you get taxed at 40%. That's the higher rate. So it really is quite a jump. And that means, say that you earn 80 grand, the first 50k of it will be taxed at 20%, but then that remaining 30k will hit that higher bracket and you'll have to pay 40% tax on that extra chunk. Beyond that, and again, this is as it stands, the goal of the government was to change this. Beyond that, if you got anything more than 150 grand, so you're a really high earner in that event, and also if you fall into that bracket, bravo, that's exciting for you. The point was that you would get 45% tax, so on anything that you earned over 150 grand. The thing that the Tories wanted to do under Liz Truss and the key player Kwasi Kwarteng was to cut the basic rate from 20% to 19%. So say you earn 30k, you no longer have to pay 20% tax. You can actually just pay 19%. We're gonna cut your taxes just by a bit, but 1%. The other thing that they wanted to do was to remove that top rate, that top whack. You know, once you get over 150 grand, you have to pay 45%. They just wanted to scrap it. The other tax cut that they announced, in fact, there's loads, but another really key one was, do you remember Rishi Sunak rose the national insurance tax? Really controversial policy under him, but his stance on it was, look, COVID cost us so fucking much, we need more money. Let's just up everyone's national insurance. And like anyone who's earning basically pays national insurance, so everyone's paying into this pot, I'm going to up it. The Liz Truss government scrapped it. So they said, actually, we're going to reverse that rise. Forget Rishi Sunak ever said anything, not happening. So that was another tax cut that was introduced. The next thing they announced, I do want to cover this, even though it's a little bit complicated, is about stamp duty. Stamp duty is basically a tax. You pay it when you buy a house. And the amount that that tax is proportionate to how much the tax, how much the house is worth. If it's a super expensive house, you pay more in stamp duty. And initially, before Liz Truss waded in, before Kwasi Kwarteng waded in, anything up to 125 grand, if your house was less than or up to 125 grand, you didn't pay that tax. They have come in and said, let's double that threshold so you don't have to pay any tax on anything up to 250 grand. And on top of that, if you're a first-time buyer, the tax-free amount has gone up to 425 grand. Obviously, houses are super expensive now. Back in the day, 425 grand would get you like a 5-bed. Now, like, you're lucky if you can get a flat in London, like a 2-bed or 1-bed flat. But still, no stamp duty up until that threshold if you're a first-time buyer. Big new policy, all included in this mini-budget. It is quite staggering that it is called a mini-budget because it has played Twister with the economy somewhat. John Hatfield, who I chat to very, very soon, he kind of unpacked with me how this affects you in much more detail. Pensions, mortgages, the rate of the pound, if you're going on holiday, all of that stuff. He also uses the phrase wee rowy boats, and in his heavy Scottish accent, it was absolutely glorious. So you're going to want to stick around just for that, frankly. Oh my God, I nearly forgot to mention like the biggest part of this, or one of the biggest parts of this. So Kwarteng, part of this mini budget, Kwarteng cancelled the planned rise in corporation tax. That is going to amount to a lot less money that the government are going to get a hold of. So in April 2023, the original plan was that corporations were going to see a rise in their taxes from 19%, which is what they currently pay, to 23%. It would have been a substantial jump. That was the plan. Kwarteng cancelled it. He called it off. So it's going to remain at 19% for corporations. I was not kidding when I said that the main theme of this rollout was tax cuts. Literally drink every time you hear me talk about tax cuts. And so the main, you do not need me to tell you this, you've probably put two and two together. The main concern from critics looking at this budget is this is a lot less money that the government is going to have in its pot. Literally tens of billions if you add up all these tax cuts that the government is going to have less in terms of its ability to spend money on things that governments have to spend money on. So where are you going to get your money from? What is the plan? We have large challenges facing us. You're going to need some money to face them. What's the plan? Where are you going to get it from? Not to mention, as well, critics are looking at this and going, you know, you're also going to be spending lots of money. You've already committed to spending lots of money on helping people with their energy bills. This was one of the first things that Truss kind of announced instantly after entering 10 Downing Street, was a fairly hefty package of spending, government spending, to support people, to subsidise people's energy bills. So yet more money coming out and much less money coming in. This is a concern for people who haven't had as much access to Kwarteng's workings out, let's say. The final piece on this mini budget, and then for the love of God, I promise I've finished my run through of it, but this is one last really important thing to mention, is that Kwarteng said, oh yeah, you know the cap on bankers' bonuses? We're getting rid of it. So it was the case that bonuses could not get to more than twice a banker's annual salary. That was a policy that was brought in by the EU, actually, I believe, in response to the financial crash. Kwarteng said, get rid of that cap. Bankers, fill your boots. The sky's the limit. There's no ceiling on you for that. Here is him justifying that part of it.
A strong UK economy has always depended on a strong financial services sector. We need global banks to create jobs here, invest here, and pay taxes here in London. In London. Not in Paris, not in Frankfurt, and not in New York. All the bonus cap did was to push up the basic salaries of bankers or drive activity outside Europe. It never capped total remuneration. So let's not sit here and pretend otherwise. It didn't cap total remuneration. So as a consequence of this, Mr. Speaker, we are going to get rid of it.
Yeah. Kwasi Kwarteng there, setting out this just radical set of tax cuts, the most radical that we've seen since 1972 in the UK. And he was addressing the House of Commons there, of course. Okay, so what's the reaction been like? John goes into this in more detail, but the thing that I found most fascinating was that really the people who usually stay neutral in these situations arguably came out with the biggest splash. For example, Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, said he was concerned about the, quote, lack of detail and independent scrutiny in that mini budget. That's for the Bank of England to be concerned and to say that this is like essentially slapdash is quite a response. And Paul Johnson, the director of the Institute for Fiscal Studies, again, an independent group of economists, he made a statement saying, quote, today the Chancellor announced the biggest package of tax cuts in 50 years without even a semblance of an effort to make the public finance numbers add up. So like, he's kind of saying, you know, you've just decided this stuff and you've not shown your working out. I'm worried that there wasn't even any working out at all. How have you done this? This doesn't even make sense. Like, extremely critical, not afraid at all to voice their concern, which is unusual. There was also trouble. I mean, you can imagine there was trouble from Labour and the Lib Dems, the SNP, you know, the opposition within Parliament. But I think the key point to raise is there was also tremendous trouble within the Conservative Party ranks, especially around, interestingly, around the removal of that top rate of tax. You know, for people who earn 150k and beyond, the removal of that that Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng announced, that was the biggest bugbear of the Conservative or many Conservative Party MPs. And actually, I'm not just talking about MPs in Parliament, I'm talking about the Cabinet as well. It seems as though some of these announcements, or perhaps even all of them, were a shock to the Cabinet. This is the, well, traditionally, the group of people that all consult with each other under Liz Truss, a team of people that she's promoted from within the Conservative Party ranks. And it seems as though they were in the dark as well. Have a listen to this. It's Liz Truss speaking to Laura Koonsberg from the BBC in an interview all about it.
Can I ask you a premise? Did you discuss scrapping the top rate with your whole cabinet?
No. No, we didn't. It was a decision that the Chancellor made.
So there we go. Liz Truss, do you know one thing about Liz Truss is she answers the question. Is that terrifying? Sure, in scenarios like this. But it is quite interesting to now have a politician who doesn't mince her words at all, let's say that. And all of this has meant for a pretty tough week for Liz Truss. Here's what she had to say in that same interview about how things had gone.
So I'm afraid there is an issue that interest rates are going up around the world. And we do have to face that, and we do have to do that. But I do want to say to people, I understand their worries about what has happened this week. And I do stand by the package we announced. And I stand by the fact that we announced it quickly because we had to act. But I do accept we should have laid the ground better. I accept that.
You accept you
and
should have laid the ground
I
better.
I have learnt from that. I have learnt from that. And I will make sure that in future we do a better job of laying the ground.
Okay, that's the kind of high-level catch-up. I've caught you up with some of these policies. Please don't panic if they don't make a lot of sense to you. They soon will. This is where my dear friend and guest, financial journalist, editor and author John Hatfield comes in. I started our conversation by asking him about... I basically said, what were Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng thinking? What was their goal? Why did they do this mini-budget? Why did they go about it this way? What message were they trying to send?
A great question, Julia. I think the message that we're trying to send is the one they've been sending for a decade. All evils in society and the economy can be cured by slashing taxes to the bone and slashing the state to the bone. So you have to give them full marks for consistency, but I think they wanted to make a big splash after the sort of Johnson years where, you know, Boris agreed to everything with anyone and talked, you know, vaguely about green economies and green recoveries and levelling up, but not much happened. So they came in with their extremely hard right agenda. And I think they just wanted to show that they were hitting the ground running from day one, whereas they hit the wall running from day one. And it didn't go down quite as well as I think they anticipated. Nobody was consulted with, not the OBR, the watchdogs who keep an eye on your sums to make sure they add up, the independent watchdog for that. They didn't even consult with the cabinet. So it's all there in their Bible, Britannia Unchained or Unhinged, if you prefer. But it's two things they believe passionately in. Cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes, and shrink the state, which means cutting benefits, cutting welfare. That's what they're about.
Yeah, and the idea is, when you talk about hard right, because I think some people even get a bit stuck with the right-left thing, what does it actually mean?
Yeah.
But are you defining that as really hard right is, we're not going to charge you, but we're also not going to help you?
Pretty much, in a nutshell, yeah. If you want to put it in really simple terms, the left and Social Democrats are more about helping society have freedom from things. Freedom from hunger, freedom from sickness, freedom from anxiety about employment, freedom from oppressive employers who exploit them, freedom from. The right is more about freedom to do what you want, freedom to spend your money on whatever you want to have it spent on, freedom to just please yourself. And the sort of ongoing tension between those two freedoms has pretty much characterised the last 100 years of politics. And
right, including now, you would say?
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, I was going to ask you, now we've kind of got to the bottom of what their goal was. And like you said, I think a big part of it was, we've promised this. We have to do it. We're going to do it because we don't want to be the people that don't keep their promises. That's a big faux pas in politics. But I was going to ask you how the message landed. You've given us a hint. What I'm particularly interested in is this point you made about neutral parties. So the OBR, correct me if I'm wrong, does it stand for Office for Budget Responsibility?
Yeah.
Right. That's a neutral party, you said?
It's a statutory body that was set up about 10 years ago. And their job is to independently monitor and verify the Chancellor's budget so that the Chancellor doesn't do anything too damaging or too ridiculous, and they can show that independently everything's been costed and it's not going to break the bank or tank the economy. They're basically the auditors of the budget. So just let every company gets an auditor to come in and say, yeah, these books actually add up. You're not insolvent. You can keep trading. That's essentially what the OBR is. It's an auditor for the government, for the Chancellor. Okay. But this time, Mr. Kuerteng decided not to call in the auditors. So he put out unaudited accounts, which always rings massive alarm bells in the business world. And he totally bypassed them and he didn't consult with anybody. So I think it was meant to be a sort of a magician pulling the rabbit out of the hat, but it turned out that the rabbit was, you know, a sort of chicken's corpse rather than a rabbit. And everything. Slightly spooked by it. And in the absence of the OBR, there are a lot of extremely smart analysts out there in merchant banks and stockbrokers and the like and other governments. And they very quickly drew their own conclusions that this was not costed, this was not funded. And it basically risked the British economy.
Can you explain why? It must have been extreme for neutral parties to step forward and say, we're unhappy. Firstly, could you give us a bit of a specific on that? What were their concerns specifically? And what drew them to, I guess, uncharacteristically wade in?
Mm-hmm. I think it was partly it was the fact that it was complete incoherence in the government's policy. They've got the Bank of England, who are, since Gordon Brown's days, have been charged with keeping inflation under control. You know, we've got to keep it to about 2% and obviously it's been ticking up. So you've got the Bank of England, who are statutorily obliged to keep inflation down. And then Mr. Kuerteng, with his trussonomics, comes in and says, you know what? Massive tax cuts, something like 45 billion in 1 year. And this policy of unfunded tax cuts, so we don't know where the money's coming from. It's not coming from growth. They've switched it around. They're hoping that tax cuts will cause growth rather than what usually happens is you get growth in the economy so you can afford to cut taxes a bit. That's the sort of standard model. So he's come in and said, right, 45 billion, which by the standards of, you know, the COVID era and, you know, all the support that was given to companies and individuals to keep them going, furlough, even by those standards, 45 billion is a lot of money. So who's paying for it? This is what all the independent people and what the OBR would have said. So where's the money coming from?
If it's not coming from the public paying taxes, you do still need that money. So what is the plan? I guess,
where's the money coming from? And Kwasi go, aha, I know, but you don't know. And I'm not telling you until the 23rd of November. So everyone drew their own conclusions, thought, you don't know where it's coming from. So one, you'll love it when you hear it, but I can't tell you yet. So what happened was the Bank of England had to say, right, this is not good. You're really upsetting people. You're scaring the markets. We've got to step in now and stabilize it because the pound was falling. And if you think of the pound, if you think of currencies very simplistically, I'll probably get shot for this, but very simplistically, the currency is the share price of the country.
Yeah.
So if we think, yeah, the country's doing well, share price goes up, currency goes up stronger. There's a lot of benefits to that in terms of borrowing. If people think, not happy with this, share price going down, pound going down, well, that creates all sorts of problems. You know, it increases inflation because all our imports, and we import more than we export, all our imports have gone up in price. It created all sorts of problems for pensions because every week, every day, all these big pension funds have to pay out billions of pounds to pensioners. And how they do that is they sell bonds and they plan to sell those bonds. And that's where they get the money to give the pensioners.
So it's kind of all based on a gamble, the whole pension scheme in this country.
To an extent, well, normally it's quite transparent and they know how much liquidity, how much money they need to pay out every week and they plan for that. And the beauty of UK government bonds is they're very highly rated. So they've got a good credit rating, just like an individual might have a good credit rating. You know, right, well, we'll let you borrow some money because, you know, you've got a good credit rating, you know, you're in credit, you haven't got massive debts or anything like that. Well, the UK government was like that. So it could borrow quite cheaply and it could afford to pay out, and the pension funds could afford to pay out using these very stable bonds, IOUs.
Right, but now
But then Mr. Quartin comes along, upsets everybody. Everyone goes, we've got no faith in the UK government anymore. We don't trust the pound as much as we did. Because the pound's sinking and the bond markets are going down, bonds are worth less. So suddenly the pension funds are going, we can't afford to pay the pensioners because these bonds aren't worth enough. You know, wow. I was going to sell my car for 10 grand, now it's only worth 5 grand. So they had to sell more bonds. And by selling more bonds into a falling market, it just turned into a rout. It was a doom loop. They had to keep selling more and more because the price kept going down, and the more they sold,
the less they were worth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Julia. Which is a long-handed way of saying that the impact of this was higher inflation, higher cost of living, upsetting everybody's pensions. And although the Chancellor kept going on about, and we are doing a lot to help with energy, well, up to a point. Any benefit that you're getting from giving people some support with their higher energy bills is getting wiped out by the fact their mortgages have gone up, because the Bank of England has to keep inflation down, has to support the pound. That's another of its jobs. So it had to go into the markets and buy billions and billions and billions and billions of pounds worth of bonds to try and put the price up again, just like, you know, buy more of them, hopefully the price goes up. Mm. And they managed to stabilise it, but it cost them £65 billion. So Mr. Quartin's going, there you go, top earners, we're going to take off the bankers' bonus caps. Bankers can earn as many bonuses as they like now. We're going to, you know, allow people at the very top end to earn a lot more money, not take as much tax off them. It's not really going to have much effect at the lower end. But all that benefit immediately wiped out by the Bank of England having to spend £65 billion to stabilise the pound.
And it's not even a matter of kind of political bias anymore. If you've got neutral bodies whose sole responsibility is to keep the country afloat, wading in and saying, this is bad, alarms, 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 then you know that it's beyond politics now, and it's more about, you know, how much it costs to be alive here. So getting on to what they were thinking. The term that's used is trickle-down economics.
Yes.
That seems to be the concept that people are throwing around. These announcements have mostly focused on, like you say, reducing tax and not stopping bankers from earning as many bonuses as they like. What does this trickle-down economics model look like? Is that what Kwasi Kwarteng is using, or is it what he was trying to use? And if so, what is his rationale, even if you're saying it's flawed?
Yeah, I will try and explain it. And terms and conditions apply. The caveat is this is not me endorsing it. It's me trying to explain it.
Yeah.
And the idea behind trickle-down economics, which goes back quite a long way, it was sort of credo of Thatcherism and Reaganism.
Ronald Reagan, yeah.
Well, his economic policy was very much about get the government out of people's lives in the United States. Small government is good government. No government is better government. And that was very much the creed. And it was also a big part of Thatcherism as well. Small government. So the idea of trickle down, and Liz Truss referenced it herself, trickle down is basically saying that if you cut taxes for corporations and rich people, they will go out and, one, spend more, but two, be incentivized to grow. And this growth will raise, it's the idea of all the boats in the harbour go up at the same time, but really you're only looking at the big oligarch yachts. That's the only ones you're helping, but you're hoping that the wee dinghies and inflatables and rowy boats will go up at the same time. And if that sounds like a flawed economic theory, well, most people would agree with you, Julia. Because it seems to be a very flawed economic theory. It's basically crumbs from the rich man's table. You will live in crumbs. They will have a banquet. They will have a hamper from Fortnum and Mason's. And if you're lucky, you'll get some crusts. And you'll
get that. You've explained really beautifully the kind of effect that all of this has had on pensions, and why the state of the pound and the strength of the pound is so interconnected with what people get from their pension funds, which is terrifying to know. How has this affected mortgage lenders, though? They've been pulling deals off sale. Why? Uh-huh. Why has that happened? What's that got to do with the...
Yeah, good question. And it's concerning. The reason basically is that there was so much uncertainty about what was happening with interest rates because there was so much uncertainty about what this mini budget meant. So one of the golden rules of markets is markets love stability. You know, they can cope with a bit of volatility, but within, you know, certain parameters, certain guardrails. This was just taking it to a whole new level of unknown unknowns. And how your mortgage lender, your building society, your bank, make money out of mortgages, because it's a commercial product, is that they lend to us at a certain rate above the bank base rate. They borrow from the bank at a lower discount rate, and the wee gap in between the spread is where they make their money. The trouble was they couldn't price these because they didn't know what the base rate was going to be. And as it turns out, the base rate is now way up, you know, about 6%, which is, you know, it's trebled in the space of days. So they were sitting there thinking, well, we could really be left holding the cold bathwater here if we're not careful.
So we could end up losing money if we let these deals go through.
If we say to people, right, you know, you're coming up to your remortgage, you've got a fixed deal, it's coming to an end, you want to lock it in again. You know, if we lock it in at 4%, that might be too much and we might lose business to other mortgage lenders, or it might be too little and we end up, you know, subsidising somebody else's mortgage.
Wow.
So obviously they'd find a way, but they didn't want to create uncertainty in the market for lenders. So they had to just put their hands up and say, look, it's moving too fast. It's too uncertain. We can't predict this. And that's where the instability and the uncertainty comes in and it upsets everybody.
So it's
that's why they held off. That's why they pulled products because they thought, we don't know if these are profitable anymore. They're too risky at the moment. Let's wait till it settles down. And then we'll issue new products based on the new price level.
Yeah, it undermines their whole business model if they can't somewhat predict that what they're doing makes sense, both for the person who's getting the mortgage, but also for them in order to make any money.
That's it.
And they just, so in the current state of things, they were like, we can't do our job.
Yeah.
Because it requires an ability to predict. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, they like get into the supermarket to buy your milk and, you know, there's a sudden rush on the milk markets, the milk spot markets. You're going, I don't know if milk's going to be £2 a gallon, I don't know if it's going to be 2p a gallon. You know, what's it going to be? Let's hold off buying milk.
Right. Earlier, John, you talked about the fact that this rollout, this economic policy rollout that Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng threw us into, it wasn't done in this official way where the Chancellor stands outside with the red briefcase, it's an official budget and it has to be quote unquote audited was the word you used.
Yes.
They went about it in a different way. I think just before we started recording, you called it a special fiscal event. That's what they named it rather than an official budget.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. Is that, do you think from your perspective, was that an attempt to, right, well, if we do it this way, we don't necessarily have to follow all the rules.
Yeah. It was to get round the rules. It was a blatant attempt to dodge scrutiny. But, you know, if it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck. If it looks like a budget and it has the impact of a budget, it's a budget. And normally we'd have got all the working with the budget and all the people that were concerned, you know, the public and all the financial community could look at it. They could look at the sums and they could see, does this add up? And they could take all these sort of forecasts about what the ramifications would be. But there was none of that there.
Okay.
But backfired spectacularly because it's now being audited on the hoof.
Okay, I'm just going to stop you here at this juncture and chat to you alone for a second. I want to make sure that you can fully understand my conversation with John and make sure that you're happy with all the jargon and stuff. We move on at this point to talk about the really controversial bit of this mini budget, which was them binning off, removing that top rate of income tax. Remember at the beginning of the episode, I talked about how it kind of used to come in three tiers. You'd have basic rate, and that affected anyone earning between about 12k and about 50k. Then you'd have the added rate, which was, okay, if you earn anything between 50k and 150k, you actually have to pay more tax on that bit. And then there used to be this top rate of income tax, which is if you earn anything more than 150k, first of all, well done, that's nice for you. But second of all, you actually have to pay 45% on that bit of it. Kwasi Kwarteng binned it off. Now let's listen to him in the House of Commons explaining why he thought that was a good idea.
High tax rates damage Britain's competitiveness. They reduce the incentive to work, to invest, and to start a business. And the higher the tax, the more ways people seek to avoid them, or work elsewhere, or simply work less, rather than putting their time and effort to more creative and productive ends. Take the additional rate of income tax. At 45%, it is currently higher than the headline top rate in G7 countries like the US and Italy. And it is even higher than social democracies like Norway. But I'm not going to cut the additional rate of tax today, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to abolish it altogether. Yeah. From April the 23rd, we will have a single higher rate of income tax of 40%. This will simplify the tax system and make Britain more competitive. It will reward enterprise and work. It will incentivise growth. It will benefit the whole economy and the whole country.
Okay, Kwasi Kwarteng justifying that decision there to remove the top rate of income tax. But just over a week later, after threats from backbench MPs in their own party, the Conservative Party, as well as, of course, from the opposition saying, look, we're not going to support this. And despite repeated claims that they were going to stand firm, Kwasi Kwarteng and Liz Truss for a while didn't budge. In fact, they doubled down and said, nope, we're doing it. You're going to have to deal with it. Actually, just over a week later, they scrapped it and they said, okay, sorry, never mind. We'll keep the 45% income tax rate thing. Forget we said anything. This is what he had to say.
We were focused on delivering the growth plan. There's a lot of good stuff in the growth plan. And what was clear, talking to lots of people up and down the country, talking to MPs, talking to voters, talking to our constituents, was that the 45p rate was simply a distraction on what was a good set of policies and a strong package.
So there you go. That was one aspect of the mini budget that they did go back on and that now remains the same. So we do still have those three tiers of income tax. At this juncture, I asked John Hatfield, we'll go back to my conversation with him, I asked, why did they U-turn on that bit? Why was it that bit particularly? And what will that mean in the grand scheme of things? Is this going to help?
It seems that they U-turned because of what, you know, political insiders like to call the optics, which is a fancy way of saying it looked really bad. And it was indefensible and it had pissed everyone off. And, you know, what's the point of a policy if, you know, it alienates everybody? And the immediate effect of that was Labour went to, you know, a 33% lead in some polls, which is game-changing. But I think they realised that they couldn't even sell this to a lot of people in their own party. Mr. Kwarteng said, oh, this is becoming a distraction. Well, some distraction, you know.
Tanking the economy.
But, you know, we've got to see it in the context. You asked Julian, it was a good question. What does this mean? Is this a U-turn? What are the implications of that? Well, I see it more as, hey, we were driving the car straight into the wall at 90 miles an hour, but, you know, after taking some good advice, we're now going to drive the car straight into the wall at just 80 miles an hour. Because the top rate of tax, the 45% top band, deciding not to scrap that will keep about 2 billion in the government's coffers, and it will not disperse that to very rich people. But that leaves another 43 billion in corporation tax cuts, in base rate cuts, in reversing the increase in national insurance, in a lot of the in England and Wales. Stamp duty, they scrapped that. So that's a lot of money not coming into government coffers. Now, even if we target that or we analyse that by the lights of Trussonomics followers, they say these tax cuts are to achieve growth, and this growth will help everybody. And
the trickle-down thing, yeah.
There will be an element of that, but we have to ask, what do very well-off people spend an extra 50 grand on? If you're a millionaire, you're going to get essentially, well, slightly less now because of that top rate going, but you're still going to get the thick end of 50 grand more from the government. Thank you very much. If you're in the bottom decile, the bottom 10% of people actually earning, not, this is not people in benefits, this is people actually earning, it's going to be something like between 90 and 120 pounds. So what's going to happen to that 50 grand? Are you going to immediately go down and say, right, I'd like to invest in some research and development, I'd like to sponsor an apprentice, and I would like to buy a share of that new road?
Yeah, like pour it into the country.
No, you're gonna buy, you're gonna put it in offshore bonds, you know, to sort of minimize your tax, you know, liability. Well, you might spend some of it in this country. You might buy a new BMW, a German car made by a German manufacturer. So you might help create jobs in the local dealership in Surrey, but you know, you have to ask, really, how much of this money is actually going to benefit Britain and unleash Britain? I mean, Joe Biden waded in. You mentioned the trickle-down economics. I think Joe Biden tweeted last week, I am sick of hearing about trickle-down economics. It doesn't work and it never has. Words to that.
So the irony of it, that Americans, the American system, which no one's saying that it's perfect at all, but they have a reputation for pursuing, you know, the American dream, which is you can, the freedom to do what you want and the government won't be in your way. And so this like concept of we're not going to tax you loads of money and then you can go and do your thing. And now Biden's turned around and said, why don't we explore forgiving people student debt? And of course, there's this ongoing debate about health insurance there. And, you know, it's as if we're swapping places.
You know, you're right.
All of this has felt somewhat abstract and theoretical, and it's kind of hard to wrap your head around. But for someone who's listening to this going, all this volatility you're describing, all of the lack of confidence from neutral bodies in the government, all the changes of, you know, changes of heart that the government are having or perhaps are due to have, how is this going to affect me? Where do we stand at the minute? Has it settled a little bit, or are people going to feel this even more than they're already feeling a cost of living crisis in the coming months?
Yeah. I wish I could be the bearer of good news. I think if we're looking at it as a glass half full, we can say that the Bank of England did its job. It stabilised the pound. It has hiked interest rates. So unfortunately, mortgages are going up. The weaker pound is going to increase inflation because so much of what we buy is in dollars, you know, the oil price is in dollars. A lot of our imports we now have to pay more for. So overall, yeah, it's going to exacerbate things.
On top of a cost of living crisis. And I know you said that one of their things was, yeah, but we're supporting you with energy. But you're sort of saying, cool, you saved a finger, but you chopped off a leg by hurting inflation rates, the pound, mortgages, pensions. Uh-huh. Yeah,
that's the only way to describe it. I like that analogy, Julie. But yeah, the other thing to think about is, where is the money coming from? And they're still holding out. Will they, won't they share that analysis with us from the OBR? But somebody's got to pay for it. So maybe we're in the process of breaking it so we can fix it. And that's the positive takeaway.
Great. Well, John, even though this was so depressing, it was really nice to see you. It was nice to catch up with you.
Good to talk to you, Julia.
Okay, John Hatfield there, who kindly took the time out to explain all this stuff to me. I think it's further evidence that the Scottish accent is absolutely elite. I hope that you liked him saying rowy boats as much as I did. But all that being said, you know, we are in a phase of uncertainty. He did talk about how these neutral bodies like the Bank of England did wade in and do what they could to steady things. But it doesn't mean that we're kind of out in the clear. I think that this is going to be a rocky few months, and your bank balances are going to feel the impact, good or bad. Keep me posted. Like, you're going to feel it. So let me know how it does feel. You know, if you feel like the government's energy policy plus the fact that they've cut your taxes somewhat, if overall you feel better off, or if you think, well, no, because now the cost of things is going up because the pound is weaker against, for instance, the dollar than it used to be, and so imports are more expensive, whatever, let me know how all the stuff is affecting you, because I think for each individual case it'll be different, but I'm absolutely certain that you won't be neutral about it. I'm sure you'll have an opinion. With that said, you can get in touch with me on Instagram at @JuliaBell_X, or you can get in touch with the Bare Naked Politics Instagram at @BareNakedPolitics. And like John said, these things tend to be a bit of a pendulum. Maybe experimenting with these economic policies will be dead painful in the short term, and then it'll see us through to landing on something that's more functional in the long run. We will see. Maybe this will be beneficial overall. I'm intrigued to see how the rest of the year and the beginning of next works out. I'm sure you are too. Oh, and of course, I want to thank the wonderful John Hatfield. Thank you for making such a usually unattainable subject so much fun, really easy to grasp. You're a brilliant commentator and a great guest and friend of the podcast. And I want to thank my producer, Hannah. You really were a force in putting this complicated, nightmarish episode together. Thank you for your assistance in researching and constructing the episode. And with that, I'll speak to you in the next one. Thank you for listening. Well done if you got to here. That was a lot. And I hope you're looking after yourselves. All right. Goodbye.